Greetings and welcome back to the second episode of Research on American Counties. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. It really means a lot to me. So, kind of like what I was saying last time, the episode will dive into what the sizes and shapes of the counties are, as well as why they have those characteristics. However, before I continue with this specific topic, I would like to illustrate why the counties are important in the first place. Prior to carrying out this project, I believed that counties were essentially a meaningless construct, but listening to some very smart men, I have been able to learn that counties, at least in the United States, are actually very important. I was fortunate enough to be able to interview some very knowledgeable men for this project, one of which was Kurt Kinnearum, my high school history teacher at Rocky Mountain High School in Fort Collins, Colorado, Larimer County Commissioner John Kefalas, and Professor Fred Shelley of the University of Oklahoma. The following are some clips I took from my interviews with them that I recorded on the Voice Memos app, where they describe the importance of counties in the United States, aside from their place as voting districts. I do apologize in advance for the quietness of the recordings, so each time I introduce a snippet from the interviews, I advise you to turn it up so you can better hear the soundbite. The first one is from Professor Shelley.
Precincts, and there often are many precincts in a single county. But what are the importance today? They don't have the degree of importance they would have, 50, 100, 150 years ago. But they're still organizations, if you will, of local government. And in many cases, different counties have different rules and laws and regulations. For example, at least in this part of the country, some counties are dry counties. It's illegal to sell alcohol. And others are wet counties. So what you often see is on the border, just across on the wet county side, you'll see several bars.
This next clip is from Mr. Kinnearum.
Counties help with the census. Counties provide services, sewer, water, electrical, for people that live outside of cities. So it's a structure mechanism for people to have access to government that live outside of cities.
This last one is from Commissioner Kefalas.
Counties are a level of government, a branch of government that is closer to people, and I think that's really important. So I think that when you talk about the different levels of government, municipalities, counties, state, federal, the closer you get to where the people live, where the communities are, I think the more you can build relationships, have trusting relationships, have good communication back and forth, and engage people in solving really complex problems. So I think I don't know about the political, to me it's important because we provide a lot of important services and we're closer to the people, and there are opportunities, more opportunities for people to engage in the arena of civic responsibility. And in many ways, counties have different responsibilities, different charges, the services we provide, the infrastructure that we're responsible for, different than, for example, municipalities or towns. Municipalities and towns are located within the counties, so that by its nature requires us to work together on issues.
Shelley also mentioned how, especially in the 19th century, how people's primary interaction with the government was the county for carrying out things like paying taxes.
Because for many people, especially in the 19th century, their primary interaction with the government was in the county. They paid taxes to the county and had other business to do with the county. They didn't have as much direct business with the state government, or certainly not the federal government in those days.
Commissioner Kefalas was also able to add some solid information in his responses.
I know that in Colorado, we have 64 counties. Most of those counties are statutory in nature, which means that they, they don't have as much flexibility in terms of state law, that we basically have to follow state law. Larimer County, I think, was established before Colorado was a state, was determined to be a state. So it's got a long, rich history, agricultural history, pioneer history, and so forth. But again, there are 64 counties. Most are statutory. Some are what are called home rule counties, where they have their own charter, and they have much more flexibility to do things outside of state law. Weld County, for example, one of the 64, just to the east of us, where Greeley is and places like that, that is a home rule county. And interestingly, they have 5 county commissioners. Larimer County has 3, and most counties in Colorado have 3 commissioners, with some exception. In counties throughout the country, and certainly in Colorado, county commissioners are elected by district. And so that's something to keep in mind. Whereas other counties, like Larimer County, the 3 of us, we are elected at large. And so you know what that means?
You ask the state?
Pardon?
You ask the state?
Not the state, but the county. So in Larimer County, currently there are 3 commissioners, District 1, 2, and 3. A commissioner must reside in a particular district. One of the things I've learned as a county commissioner is how important this whole idea of local control is. Oftentimes, laws are passed at the state level and or at the federal level, and they mandate or require that local jurisdictions like counties or cities have to do certain things. They often don't back it up with funds, and that's a concern.
In addition to all of this, I recently went to Texas to attend a wedding at which I was the best man, so I was asked to witness the signing of the marriage license. And this also happens to be a function of the county. There was an article that was shared with me and written by Dr. Gerald Webster, a retired professor from the University of Wyoming, where in a paper of his he notes that counties have been, quote, historically the primary division of local government in the United States. The majority of these counties were formed in an agrarian and less technologically advanced time to render services quite different from those that they provide today, end quote. Webster also adds that counties play a key financial role in the context of the state that they reside in, as well as the communities that they host, and providing the service of law enforcement, for example, like the county sheriff. As I was conducting research on this specific subject, I came across a video that did a nice job of depicting the development of counties in the United States on YouTube titled United States Historical County-State Boundaries. For the record, I do realize the irony of me talking about a video on a podcast, but in all seriousness, the clip hits the nail on the head of what I am talking about. The video is about 30 seconds long, and it starts in the year 1630 with Massachusetts. Prior to jumping into the meat of this podcast and to avoid confusion, I would like to explain the lenses of which I will be viewing the United States in terms of how it is broken up into regions. I understand this can be a contentious issue because when I was growing up, I would have lighthearted but nonetheless intense debates about what region my home state of Colorado resided in. Personally, I used to advocate for it being in the Southwest, which was where it was relegated to in the TV show I loved to watch, How the States Got Their Shapes. My opposition would argue that it was either in the Midwest because, as they were so fond of saying, it was in the middle of the West, cue my eye roll, or they would say it was in the West. Anyway, that is beside the point because for this project I have selected what I consider to be a very fair way of breaking up the United States into regions in the 2010 Census Bureau Regions Map of the United States. What I like about this map is that it breaks the United States up into major regions and subregions that are based on major natural features as well as widely accepted cultural boundaries. When describing this, I'll move from west to east with the west region, that is, broken up into the Pacific subregion that includes the states on the west coast, including Alaska and Hawaii. Then there is the mountain subregion that includes New Mexico, Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, Nevada, Utah, and Arizona. From there, there is the Midwest, which is divided into the west, north, central, and east, north, central subregions, the former of which features the states of Kansas, Nebraska, the Dakotas, Minnesota, and Missouri, whereas the latter has Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, and Wisconsin. To the south, there is the South region that is split into the three subregions of the West, South Central, East, South Central, and South Atlantic. The first of these has the states of Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Louisiana. The second of these has Kentucky, Tennessee, Mississippi, and Alabama. The last of these has Florida, the Virginias, the Carolinas, Georgia, Maryland, and Delaware. More content on the last of these is to come, so stay tuned. But I digress, as the region to the north, the Northeast region, has the New England subregion as well as the Middle Atlantic subregion. The first of these includes the states of Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, while the second has New York, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey. Okay, so that was a bit of a mouthful, but I think you will find it extremely useful, especially for this episode. And I would add for the following episodes, too. Going back to the video I mentioned earlier, some interesting takeaways I found from the video was that in the first half, there were plenty of county shape and size changes as states and territories were being made. In addition to this, the first 15 seconds of the video, up until about 1823, shows the development of counties as the nation expanded westward, with most of that time being concentrated on the East Coast. Moreover, there seemed to be an incredible leap in the number of counties after the Revolutionary War. In addition to this, counties from New York to South Carolina seem to be much higher in concentrations than states that are farther west, south, and north of them, like Maine, Florida, and Michigan. The reason that I would like to focus on these states in particular is because they are just as far east as many other states that had a high number of counties, like Ohio, Vermont, and North Carolina. Also, I would like to point out that at this point in the video, there are no counties west of what is today recognized as the state of Oklahoma, and today, about 200 years later, the story is obviously very different. My reasoning for emphasis here is that there has been a considerable amount of expansion and development in terms of the existence of counties in the United States over a relatively short period of time. In the last 15 seconds of the video, the rest of the states west of Kansas get filled in. There are counties where the majority of this work gets completed is by about 1855. Simultaneously, there also begins to be a development of counties in Texas on the west coast and the southern part of the Mountain West region. With this last subregion, one can notice that county lines are following lines of latitude, which is a continuing trend that was used earlier in the century for states west of the Mississippi River and north of the Red River, but not used in states further east. And so by about 1875, eastern Texas and the states in the eastern part of the west, north, central Midwest, or as I like to call it because of its awkward phrasing, the plains subregion of the Midwest, really start to get filled in with counties getting progressively small as time goes on. This is especially the case with the states west of Kansas, but is not the case with Florida, which at this point has sizable counties in the peninsula part of it. Furthermore, I would like to point out the example of Oklahoma, which at this point does not have any counties and is rather broken up into three regions. Finally, Both the Pacific and Mountain West are now filling themselves out with counties, albeit in a different fashion than their eastern counterparts. What I mean by this is that the county sizes are considerably larger than those to the east of them, with some counties being in the hubs, if you will, which can be seen in areas like where I-25 is presently in Colorado, which, if you don't already know, is just east of the Continental Divide. The other hubs are Northern California, Northern Oregon, and Western Montana. This actually was the case for several of the states farther east, but I think it stands out much more in the west because of the county size difference. One more note is that, unlike any other state, Wyoming has what seem to be lines of longitude for its counties. Okay, so once 1929 rolls around, counties in terms of their size, shape, and amount are approximately what they are presently. The only amendments here are on that of a few western states like Nevada and Alaska. The reason that I spent so much time talking about this video is because it shows the clear union between the development of states and counties. Now, as the United States expanded westward, so did their counties, and population centers were a driving force in the density of counties. Furthermore, it also highlights how the formation of states, many of which were strongly influenced by natural forces like rivers, impacted county shapes as well. Moving on to changing the focus from the history of county shapes and sizes to their present reality, I found a current county map of the United States that does a fantastic job illustrating this topic. On this map, there is a clear belt, if you will, from central Texas to New Hampshire, where counties are typically very small, of circular or square shape, and are in very high densities. Specifically, the circular counties are more in the eastern part of the South, so the Atlantic and East South Central, or as I would rather call it, the Deep South subregions, the East North Central, as I prefer to call it, the Great Lakes region of the Midwest, Middle Atlantic subregion, and the southern part of the New England subregion. Contrarily, the square-like counties are in the West South Central subregion, or Shallow South, which is what I like to call it, the plains part of the Midwest until northern Minnesota. I am making a point to describe these counties because they are all meshed together and differ from places like Maine and southern Florida, where counties are more unique in shape, larger in size, and lower in density. Speaking of, all the western region of the United States is very similar to this, including western Texas with a higher density and lower size of counties in areas with higher population densities like I-25 in Colorado. Another example of this is the San Francisco Bay area in California, and the west coast of Oregon and Washington. Kinnearum does a great job of elaborating upon boundaries in the United States by saying that...
So, especially when counties are first formed, it's natural, it's easy for surveyors and cartographers to follow landforms. But in instances, particularly of waterways, the banks change course, and so that gets into private property issues and even state boundary issues, like who has governance over this area now that this has changed. And sometimes those courses change miles, right? Yeah. I'm thinking of like the steamship Arabia that sunk in the Missouri and the 1850s, and it was found in a field, a farmer's field, you know, and it hadn't moved, but the course of the Missouri River had moved like miles away. And so that can cause problems, because then you're, especially if there are people living on one side or the other, and it affects population within counties or between counties, that's a problem. Plus, it's hard for cartographers to make maps, accurate maps.
Mm-hmm.
So it needs to be a firmer boundary.
Regarding the size of the counties in the United States, not only do they appear to be larger in the West, but they in fact, are also larger in a numerical sense. In fact, while Western states, those in the Pacific and mountain subregions have an average county size of approximately over 5,000 square miles and an average amount of about 33 counties per state. However, in Alaska, they are called boroughs. On the contrary, counties in every other region are much smaller in size and greater in number. This can be seen in how the South, Midwest, and Northeast combined have an average county size of about 816 square miles and an average number of about 87 counties per state. In fact, the top three states with the most counties in them are Texas with 245, Georgia with 159, and Kentucky with 120, all states residing in the southern region. To put it in another way, the United States has a total of 3,143 counties, and just these three states combined make up almost 17% of the counties in the United States. Consequently, Kentucky has an average county size of about 335 square miles, which is the lowest average county size in the United States. With the guys I was able to interview for this project, they all emphasized the element of population being a key factor in determining the number of counties as well as their size. The following are instances where they mentioned the key dynamic of population in determining the county size and number. The first segments are from Professor Shelley.
Fewer people, there's less need for county government.
Well, that was true, you know, from the Rockies out west, yes.
Okay.
That's an area where, from the Great Plains eastward, there's pretty much a continuous agricultural settlement, okay? And once you get to the Rockies and further west, there's not. I mean, many areas are just not suitable for agriculture, or they can be farmed only with irrigation. You know, up the mountains, you can't farm. So, in many areas, people made their living by ranching rather than farming. And a ranch takes up a lot more land than a farm, and much less labor intensive.
These next clips are from Mr. Kinnearum.
Population is a big one. I think population is the biggest thing. Basically population, because they have to have a mechanism for taking the census.
Kinnearum was specifically referring to population being the largest factor in influencing county size. Then we have some notes from Commissioner Kafalas.
The other consideration as far as boundaries and all that, and I don't know all the methodologies, but again, a lot of it ties into population. So in Colorado, you have 64 counties, but the 10 most populous counties, including Larimer, guess where they're located? Along the Front Range.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the population of Colorado is along the Front Range, on the eastern slope. And then you've got counties, for example, Frankie, Larimer County currently, our census is probably 375,000 people in Larimer County. You look to the county to the west of us, Jackson County, where Walden is and places like that. The last time I looked, they had about 1,500 people.
Oh, wow.
So you have, and then counties on the eastern plains or counties, on the western slope. So there's quite a bit of difference as far as, the sizes, the geographic size, and certainly population. But I know you can, every 10 years, there's redistricting, you can, based on shifts in population, you can change the boundaries, the district boundaries. And that's where we look at, reapportionment, redistricting for the state, districts, the House and Senate, and then, of course, the federal. And you can see that, as you go east and east of the Mississippi, there's more people, density is more, and so it looks like the counties are more compact. Whereas you look at Colorado, they're larger because there's less density, less people. A lot of it's based on geography, a lot of it's based on population. And when you're looking at other types of boundaries, political boundaries, districts, populations, obviously, you've got a congressional district, for example, that encompasses a huge land mass because it includes counties, where there are not a whole lot of people. A lot of it's based on geography, a lot of it's based on population. And when you're looking at other types of boundaries, political boundaries, districts, populations, obviously, you know, you've got a congressional district, for example, that encompasses a huge landmass because it includes counties where there are not a whole lot of people. I think the biggest one is population because, again, the counties tend to be smaller, more packed as you go east, and there are more people. And so if the optimal number of people to represent as a commissioner is 100,000, let's say, then that would factor into what the size of counties. And I don't know how often that changes. What I do know is that the district boundaries can change, but I don't know if the actual overall boundaries of the county changes.
In addition to this, I was also fortunate enough to snag some solid maps courtesy of Instagram. One of them shows the counties where half the population lives. Spoiler, the vast majority of them are east of the Mountain West, and they tend to be small in size. Another map that shows this in an even clearer way places a yellow line that cuts through the middle of Texas and goes northwards, with the caption reading, about 80% of the people in the United States live east of this line. And it's also like a night view, so you can see like the lights and stuff of the United States. Other factors in the county size and shape were mentioned in the interviews, including development of transportation technology, political decisions, and physical features like topography.
Counties, new counties are created by splitting Oldens or combining parts of Oldens. You know, if there were two counties, there'd have to be some sort of a compromise or an agreement as to what the border between them would be. And so that could possibly create a jagged boundary. And if you look, the biggest counties east of Mississippi are in non-agricultural areas. I mean, Arista County, Maine, for example, I think is the largest county east of Mississippi. And that's an area that's heavily forested. There's very little agriculture there. But there's some, like there's potato farming, for example, in part of the county. But that's only a fairly small part of it. Today, something like 80% or more of the landscape is forested. In terms of creating new counties, that's been fairly unusual, I'll say, since the 1920s, 1930s. Sometimes, I know New Mexico, for example, the county that contained part of the county that's now south of Albuquerque, and the one Bernalillo County that contains Albuquerque were one county, and they were split off. There's another case like that in Arizona. Now, what I do know is, like, the size of the county, you know, they tend to be smaller in the east and larger in the west. And that, I think, reflects transportation. For example, in the 1800s, people had to travel. You didn't have local trains or cars. You know, people traveled on horseback or on foot. And so the size of a county was often determined by the distance that somebody could get up in the morning and, say, ride horseback to the county seat in the middle of the county and do business and then be back before nightfall. Well, I think part of it has to do with topography, I think. In places like Pennsylvania, and you see some of the county boundaries that are go along topography, the ridges and the mountains. Now, in the Midwest, where it's more flat, they tend to be more square. And again, a lot of it has to do with transportation and accessibility to a county seat. You know, a county, the areas that are too isolated the residents would have trouble doing business with the county government.
I can confirm that going to Eastern Texas recently for a wedding, that the land is notably flat. Kinnerm also added to this by making notes on the history of the origin of counties in the United States, as well as other political, physical, and technological factors.
Well, it dates back to the Northwest Ordinance of 1787, and that was kind of the mechanism for, after the Revolutionary War, when we got this land from the British, how to incorporate that land into the United States. And the Land Ordinance of 1785, the Northwest Ordinance of 1787, outline kind of how that's going to go. And it's a two-step process, where when a hunk of land that is not incorporated by any other state wants to become part of the United States, and they have 10,000 people, they can apply to be a territory. And then at that point, then they organize into counties so that there can be a system for counting people and for keeping track of people, and people can have access to services, government services, and that sort of thing. And then when there were 60,000 residents in that same area, then they could apply for statehood. And so that's kind of how it's the organization of counties logistically within a state. So it really depends on the political landscape within the state when they're originally put together. Because they are tied to voting districts, there's a lot of political wrangling around their shapes, because they want to include as many of their particular party as possible, right? And so even though, you know, and kind of the modern equivalent of that today would be gerrymandering within political districts, which are kind of like counties, I guess, but they change more often. But originally, that's kind of how it did. And sometimes another factor would be that they would use landforms as borders, and so that deals with some of that wonkiness too. Any state that came in before the Northwest Ordinance of 1787, they're going to be wonkier because they're organized originally differently, right? And so some of that stuff goes back to, with the 13 original states, goes back to English charters and where that land was, right? And so that's what leads to some of that wonkiness. Whereas it's more theoretically more organized after 1787. There's more organization because a lot of those Western states come in between, almost all of them come in between, Texas in 1845 to about 1900. So in that 50-year span, we have a lot of states coming in, right? And Western states. And so I think that as an expedient, plus there's more technology around surveying, that they're more geometric and not circular and wonky. That would be my guess.
Commissioner Kefalis also added to the historical and political aspects of this with his response.
You know, as the country was born and evolved, there were different levels of government, and counties were a logical level of government that was established over time. In District 1, which is the northern one-third of the county, so from Drake Road in Fort Collins, you know Drake,
mm-hmm.
all the way up to Wyoming, to the north, to the west over to Jackson County or Cameron Pass, and to the east towards, you know, to the Wells County line, Timnath, places like that. That is the District 1, the northern one-third of the county, and there's District 2 and 3.
The article from Dr. Webster elaborates more upon what Professor Shelley was saying and adds to it. Quote, county sizes were often determined by the distance a citizen could conveniently travel in one day and carry on business at the county seat. Since the horse and buggy was the principal means of transportation during that period in which many counties were formed, their sizes were frequently kept quite small. Webster also mentions a couple of examples of how counties have increased in size because of the merging of counties in Tennessee and Georgia. So with this specifically, you'll have counties like Union County or whatever, because it's a union of multiple different counties. In my interview with Commissioner Kifalas, he directed me to a few websites that have an incredible amount of information residing within them. For example, on NACO.org, NACO, an acronym for the National Association of Counties, there is a plethora of data on maps for each county in the United States, including, but not limited to, their laws, economics, and demographics. He also mentioned CCI, an acronym for Colorado Counties Incorporated, which is a nonprofit organization that works to help county commissioners in Colorado to solve issues across the state by informing commissioners on current issues in the state. A third source that Commissioner Kifalas noted was the Counties and Commissioners Acting Together, which is also known as CCAT, which is a group of county commissioners in Colorado with a very similar purpose to CCI. Alright, well that just about does it. Special thanks go out to the staff and volunteers at Studio Co. who helped me with the technological aspect of producing this podcast. I'd also like to thank my classmate, Taylor Myers, Adobe Audition, those who made the voice box at Studio Co., Professor Verco, and everyone else who has assisted me with the making of this podcast. Next episode, I will be diving into what I have found in terms of my research on some of the Euro-American and Native American-inspired county names in the United States. Thanks for listening, and I hope you listen to and enjoy the next episode.